You're listening to Guide to Brides, the wedding podcast. I'm Nikita from Team GFB, and if you're planning your wedding or helping someone who is, you're in the right place, because I'll be discussing trends, practical planning tips, and more with the help of some special guests along the way. So let's get started with today's episode.
Welcome back to Guide to Brides, the wedding podcast. Now, if you follow us on Instagram at Guides of Brides, let us know how long you've got left for your wedding and what episode you are listening to at the moment. If you're listening to this episode, then fantastic, stay with us. But if you've been listening to others, what have you also been listening to? Today, we are going to be talking all about something that I think is growing in popularity in the industry, and that is sustainability. And it's something that's really important that we as an industry and as couples who are planning our weddings take into account, because weddings do have a massive impact on the environment and can sometimes be a little bit wasteful, shall we say. And I think these topics that we're going to talk about are really, really important to consider. Today I'm joined by Liz from 29 Atelier, and we're going to be talking all about sustainable bridal wear, which is what Liz specializes in. But before we get into it, do you want to introduce yourself to the listeners?
Yeah, sure. So 29 Atelier is a luxury bridal fashion brand with who are targeting eco-conscious brides. So we're very much looking to deliver beautiful wedding dresses and kind of unpick how they can be potentially as sustainable as possible in terms of the way they're made, what they're made from, but also in the fact that maybe there's a chance to reuse and make that wedding dress not just a one-off wear, but something that could be reused and enjoyed again.
That's amazing. And I love the idea of like how you can reuse that. And we're going to talk a bit more about that throughout the episode. But let's get straight into 29 Atelier. But where did the brand come from? What's your background and why did you create it?
So basically, my journey began, I owned my own bridal boutique. So as a young entrepreneur in the early noughties, my dream was to have my own business and to work in the fashion industry. So bridal wear seems like the perfect place to start the journey. I was obsessed with reading Vogue. I was obsessed with couture, so designers such as Dior, Balenciaga. And I think my whole childhood had been spent, like I say, reading Vogue magazine, reading fashion books. And the wedding dress seemed like the way that I could deliver that for you know, sort of everyday girls to be able to enjoy wearing a beautiful couture gown. So bridal wear definitely seemed like my entry point. So I had my own store for 10 years, but as I was going along selling lots of lovely wedding dresses by lots of lovely fashion brands at the time, what I discovered is that actually a lot of these things weren't made in the UK. Most productions were outsourced overseas. And I think for me, there was two things happening here. So there was one, it seemed a shame that there was almost, you know, this sort of loss of skill. You know, the UK is a great craft and heritage producer, and nobody seemed to be continuing those traditions. And then the second thing was, it just didn't seem to make sense to me. Of course, we're a global world and things are going to go around the world so different users can enjoy them. But the fact that something, the fabric's made here and the wedding dress is made there and then it's shipped back to here, it all just seemed to not make sense to me. So I decided after 10 years that I wanted to be part of a resurgence in the industry. And the only way I was going to go and make it better was to actually go and study and train and understand and learn the skills so that I could then look to eventually have my own brand, produce it in the UK and tackling some of these issues that I've just said.
That's amazing. It's really inspiring to hear like what your story is and what the motivation is behind the brand. And in terms of like sustainability as well, and obviously that global, the want to be global and the want to service a global audience, but at the same time ensuring that the production is done as sustainably as possible and that you're being as eco-conscious as you can with production, and that you're, you know, providing a space that can provide people with skills and a happy workplace as well. And that's just really great to hear that, you know, that's your motivation behind the brand. And in terms of like your background in bridal wear and your fashion inspirations, where did they come from?
So in terms of, like I say, when I was growing up, I always wanted to be a fashion designer. And actually, to be honest, if you were to speak to kind of childhood friends, you know, I was always drawing wedding dresses. And it was just something that I was quite fascinated with, and drawing, you know, collections and things like that. So I think I just had, just from a young age, this innate love of fashion. My mum and my nan and my aunties all used to make their own clothes. So it would be, I think I just was just brought up, you know, that you'd go and pick a pattern from John Lewis or I can't remember the name of the place now that we used to go to, but you know, go and pick a pattern, choose your fabric, pick your thread, pick your zip, and I'd be, you know, I'd be in the department store, and that, you know, you'd be looking through the Vogue pattern book, and it all just seemed to be such a romantic, intoxicating idea. So, you know, I'm really sort of born from just watching my family make their own clothes. But of course, for me, I didn't just want to be a seamstress. I'd got this vision. I'd always had vision for the ideas and the designs. I wanted to be a designer. So, of course, the plan was to go to university. But I guess ambitions to kind of start earning money, and kind of, you know, you get a bit sort of side blown, don't you, when you're in your late teens, early 20s. I was just eager to get into industry and kind of get moving. But it got to the point where eventually I thought, you know, there has to be a better way. And actually, I could actually bring my love of fashion and love of, you know, sort of using my skills that I've acquired in industry and actually provide brides with a really, really good service. So I suppose the boutique was very much founded on wanting to be able to deliver a fantastic experience to brides at the time, and offer a range of dresses that really they might have to hunt. They might have to go to London or to New York, or they would, it was to bring exciting fashion to my hometown. And that's what I did. But as I was going along, and I think in the back of my mind it always bugbeared me that I hadn't been to university, so it was always there as I might do that one day in the future. And that sort of thought never left my mind. And as I was getting more experience and working with the dresses, again, I could see everything was coming from the Far East. And again, that just didn't seem to make sense to me, because if you look at what the cost of the dresses were, and then you, again, you're thinking about who's made them, where have they been made? You know, if they've been made in China or if they've been made in India, of course, they're going to have cost an absolute fraction of what they would cost to produce here. But, you know, so just you start to just question the, you know, I guess also the ethics of potentially where that could go. Because, of course, in the fashion industry, we've also all heard about sort of sometimes that the standards for employment and people who are working in the industry they're not always paid fairly and treated well. I'm not saying that that was the case with any of the brands, you know, that I was looking at, but
but it's something that sort of triggered.
It just seemed to say to me, hang on, is this right? You know, I'm not sure about this. And also, I've always loved sort of heritage things. And of course, in the UK, we have a massive history of dressmaking and tailoring and things like that.
Savile Row,
exactly. So for me, we've got this amazing heritage, but actually, you know, all of those skills was sort of being redeployed elsewhere and leaving the UK. The seamstresses that I actually had during the time I had the boutique, two of them, I mean, were incredible mentors to me. I mean, sadly, one of them's passed away. But as they were getting older and sort of needing to bring in new hands at the time, there wasn't anybody coming in through from the universities or anybody I was meeting who really seemed to have those same level of skills. So it just seemed to me that there was going to be a hole emerging in the industry if somebody didn't look to fill it.
That's a really great point. I mean, there's heritage skills that, you know, previous generations would have grown up with, because it was a lot of it held in the UK at that point, wasn't it? Sure. So it's really interesting to hear that, you know, there is that gap developing. And so it's, I think it's important for us to discuss that, because there might be people out there as well who are thinking, I want a career in this industry and I have this skill, but haven't developed it to the level that they need to, and that might be an inspiring opportunity for them.
Yeah, no, definitely. I mean, the thing I would say from that point of view is, you know, if you have a love and a passion for something, you know, go and pursue it. Mm. Don't just kind of let it harbour there and think, oh, you know, I wish, should have, would have, could have. Mm. You know, if you do love doing something, anything that's creative, or you've got a talent for something, I definitely think that if you put the effort in, you can go and actually turn your vision into a reality and pursue a career in anything that you want to do. Because obviously I think a lot of people are interested in sort of creative things, but of course you end up doing the practical thing, the first steps when you leave school. But actually, if you are determined, where there is a will, there is a way. I'm definitely testament of that. You know, I had a childhood dream. I wanted to be a designer, and, you know, however many years later, I am ultimately pursuing my childhood dream. And it's been hard. Mm. A lot of hard work and determination. There's been times when I've thought, you know, this isn't going to happen. Mm. But actually, I haven't ever given up. And as a consequence, I'm now, you know, at this point where I've managed to develop this incredible brand and
the bone structure. But you're so passionate about it. You can really see it when you're talking about it. You're so passionate about it.
No, 100% I'm passionate about it. And for me, it's when you talk about a sustainable brand, and an eco-conscious brand, you know, what is that? I think in the fashion industry, there is a lot of greenwashing. Mm. So for example, you know, vegan leather. Mm. Well, vegan leather is just plastic.
Put the word vegan at the front of it.
Yeah, so, but you know, what's worse then, is it the natural byproduct of the meat industry, you know, sort of a cow's hide, or is it worse to use a plastic, something that's going to create toxins and, you know, chemicals in the environment, and obviously something that won't degrade. So again, that is just something to think about, the greenwashing in the industry, about kind of what things are made of.
So I think in this podcast, we're going to talk about, like, can bridal wear really be sustainable? I think that's the big question that we are asking. And you've been talking about couture and your passion for couture fashion. What are your thoughts there, and what does couture actually mean?
Well, the truth is, haute couture aligns completely with Paris. Mm-hmm. So to be a couture house, really, you have to be based in Paris. Mm-hmm. That is their thing. But couture techniques of sewing are... So it's a slow fashion production. So it's, rather than using fast fashion sewing techniques, I mean, such as using overlockers and things like that, you will do things the slow way, as opposed to, so that could mean, so for example, if you were to look at, trying to think of something, but possibly say, you know, inside my jeans, you'll find that these jeans, they'll be overlocked down the seams, inside, and that's essentially, it does three stitches in one go, so it's just like one line, vroom, and it's done. Mm. Whereas if you're going to French seam something, which is ultimately going to give a more neater polished finish, then you'll sew it once, you'll trim it, you'll sew it again, press it, and it gives a more beautiful, precise finish. Mm. So couture is really thinking about the process of doing things to the best level that you could do them. So, and making things look almost as good on the inside as they do on the outside. Mm. So that's the construction side of it.
Yeah.
Of course, then you've got haute couture, which is, you know, sort of the things that you'd see on in the Parisian catwalks, which are, you know, really they're works of art, aren't they?
Yeah.
So for me,
I mean, quite frankly, I probably never wear anything from a catwalk.
Well, that would be the point. So for me, what I'm trying to achieve, I think, with a gown. So your bridal gown is a one-off, once in a lifetime. Where it's a dress or an outfit that is, you know, it's your one opportunity to have something for most people in their life that is truly made for them, truly made to fit them perfectly and truly how they want it. So as opposed to just choosing something kind of off the peg that it is as it is, having something that's made for you is a uniquely special thing. And I think that that completely aligns with couture. And then, of course, wanting to make it beautifully, finish it beauty, so every detail is considered. So when you look inside it, it looks as beautiful on the inside as it does on the outside. That's not to say, I mean, I think the biggest thing with, you know, sustainability and the eco-conscious side of the business is, we know, we aren't in a perfect world at the moment, so but we're working towards, you know, I'm not trying to protest to be profess to be evangelical and that we're a perfect brand, but I've definitely got a vision for where I want to go to, and that will eventually, as fabrics evolve and industry evolves, that it will get better and better and better and ultimately then be as eco-conscious as it can be.
Yeah, because there are fabrics out there, aren't there, that are, you know, produced, but at the same time they are biodegradable and they are made from a starch or something like that, aren't they? So, you know, it is developing, isn't it, that there are these more eco-friendly materials. So what kind of materials would you be looking at for your gowns?
So I try to favour natural fibres. So very much thinking about, you know, silk, cotton, as opposed to synthetic. Now, some lace is obviously a mainstay of bridal wear. I mean, even a lot of heritage producers of lace, you will find that some of the fibres in the lace are polyamide, which is a derivative of packed plastic, and they need to have some strength in it to support the weaves of the lace. So you will find that something can still be, you know, largely degrade, you know, so largely a natural fibre made by an artisan producer, but there still will be part of it that is not fully eco-conscious in terms of the construction of it. But hopefully what will happen is, as things evolve, the fabric science will evolve and those things will get better and better. But again, it's looking at the whole picture. So for example, tulle is another material which again traditionally is made with a polyamide type fibre. And as a consequence, you've then got to look at, you know, where is it made, and probably choosing recycled. So there's lots of choices that you can make, which are just thoughtful and reusing and being mindful of the environment, even though it's not a perfect fabric composition, is what I'm trying to say. And also, where possible, trying to favour, you know, again, if you could favour locally produced or woven cloths, that would be incredible. But of course, we're in the UK, so we're never going to be able to harvest cotton here. And again, some listeners, I'm sure, will know that cotton is a great consumer of water. So there's all sorts of, so cotton's completely natural and biodegradable, but then in terms of actually the way the crops are produced and the water that's used for those crops, again, that can have another impact on the world. So sometimes when you start diving into it, is a minefield of, because you do one thing well, but then actually there's another question to ask, you know. So cotton is completely beautiful, natural, gorgeous material, but it does consume a lot of water in its consumption.
And then that's a really interesting point that you raised there, because, you know, it then adds to that question of can we really be totally sustainable when we're producing these fashions.
I'm forever an optimist. But the thing with a wedding dress is it is different to other fashion because it is technically going to be something that is an heirloom piece. So actually, we're not looking for these garments aren't going to be put into landfill and thrown away like fast fashion. They are going to be things that are going to be preserved for generations or, you know, in 29's case, be able to be potentially reworn and enjoyed part of your wardrobe.
Can you go into a bit more detail on that? Because I find that really interesting because, you know, I bought my wedding dress and I can never imagine being able to wear it again.
Sure.
You know, and I kind of accepted that in my mind.
Yeah.
Because that's what you do. So can I just get an indication from you? Like, how do you at 29 Atelier create a wedding dress that can be worn again?
Sure. So I think a lot of bridal gowns, I mean, obviously without seeing the pictures of your dress, are something that are very, very, you know, sort of, you know, very full skirted, very structured. You know, they aren't something that you're going to be able to wear again. But with a lot of the pieces in my collection, there's a lot of, I am referencing fashion. And I think I'm trying to, reach the modern bride. So I think, you know, what does a modern bride want to wear? So sometimes with tradition, we can be sort of thought of, you know, you do think of that Cinderella gown, something that's corseted. There is almost, I think, a uniform of what a bridal gown looks like. You know, the guy wears the morning suit or the tuxedo, and then the bride wears the ball gown. Whereas I think girls now are starting to become a little bit more, so they do want to wear white, and they very much associate wearing a traditional colour with getting married, but they're becoming much more open to sort of having softer, lighter pieces without so many layers. And if that's the case, then elements can then be sort of broken down. So quite often we'll make a dress and it could be that the corset part is then after the wedding we separate it, and then that's a lovely corset that you could pair with some palazzo pants and a really nice blazer, or it could be that, you know, that you have got a lovely, our Meg dress is incredible. It's a halter neck, it's got a beautiful silk tie at the back of the neck, and again that's just an incredible piece to be able to pair. It's backless with other things after the wedding. Looks great with jeans. I mean, obviously it's a going out piece of clothing.
Yeah, it's not something you would wear like every day, but at the same time it's something that you can, you know, wear to a friend's birthday party.
Definitely.
Or something like that.
I mean, our Kate dress, which is really beautiful, it's like an incredible 3D lace. It's a lovely fitted bodice. But essentially, again, after the wedding, that could be created into a top. If you, because most girls want to wear a dress. So they, even though they might, you could wear it as separates, most people will choose to have it as a dress. And then afterwards, you can then separate them. It's a service that we offer our brides. And then they can reuse part of or all of their dress again. Again, if they've got a beautiful skirt, have it made midi length. I mean, I only had a bride last summer, and she got married in Italy, and in a beautiful sort of, it was a sort of a tulip shaped skirt, structured bodice with like an overlay skirt. And then afterwards for their actual registry, you know, she just wore the little bodice. We made the skirt into like a slip skirt, blazer
nice.
Over her shoulders, and it just completely
transformed
the look. And I know that that's then something she'll, you know, she's worn that lovely silk skirt for another, you know, other occasions, worn the bodice with other things. So it's just about looking at the piece, you know. So for example, you could come to me with your dress and I would, you know, then I'd be able to say to you, right, actually this is what we could do with it. And obviously with our collection and looking through the designs, you can actually say, well, actually, yeah, I could do that with that. And potentially, if you've chosen a natural fibred garment, you could potentially dye it. If there's not too many other layers inside it, it would be something that you could
God, imagine that, having like dyed your wedding dress and then going to another person's wedding in your wedding dress. Yeah. That'd be so funny.
It's so very surreal. But how lovely. But I do think brides are now much more open to having alternative styles of wedding dresses as well. It's not all just...
Yeah, I think I've seen like going through, especially post-pandemic, funnily enough, like yeah. people really seem to be wanting to put a lot more of their own personality into their wedding Definitely. Dress and their sort of what they're wearing to their wedding. Like, you know, I don't think the bridal pantsuit would have made such a comeback if it wasn't for the pandemic.
Yeah.
And, you know, there are so many brides that I see now on Instagram, on TikTok, who have just opted for that anyway because a dress just wasn't for them.
I mean, one of the things that's always influenced me as a designer is really, so it's connecting with people. So who are you? What is your style? So if the best version of you always likes to wear trousers, on the most important day of your life, wear trousers. You know, make them the best trousers you could ever find, but just be you, but be the, you know, be confident within yourself. Don't be restricted by, you know, what your mother-in-law thinks or, mm-hmm. you know, your grandma. You know, be true to yourself. And I think yeah. people are really buying into that narrative now. And again, there's so many beautiful ways. You know, lightness and movement is something, again, that really influences my designs. And I think actually there's lots of ways to have a really beautiful flowing gown, because I think the gowns in the collection are very magnificent, but they are created in such a way that they feel very wearable. Mm. So I think, you're stepping away from sometimes those, you know, multiple layer, more structured pieces.
Yeah, I really like that point about making it really light and flowy, because, you know, I think notoriously wedding dresses are heavy, aren't mm. they? And that's what makes them more difficult to wear again.
Yes.
So that light influence that you've got there is probably a big factor for you on that respect.
Definitely. And then bringing it back to the sort of the main hub of the conversation. Again, if you're picking something that you feel good wearing and it feels wearable, then you're more likely to wear it, want to be able to, or be able to wear it again. And therefore, that in itself is just going to make the whole thing, you know, as sustainable as possible. I mean, investment dressing. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's, to me, I'm of the ethos really that buy less, but they might cost more, mm. but buy things that you really love.
Like almost an investment in a more capsule kind of wardrobe.
Yeah. So, I mean, I've been collecting clothes for, say, you know, sort of most of my adulthood. So let's say I've bought, you know, one or two sort of key dresses every year. Well, now, obviously, I'm nearly grown up.
You know, nearly.
I've got a lovely collection of lovely dresses. So when I go on holiday, I don't need to buy anything new mm. because I have collected these lovely pieces that are very me, and therefore they become... That's a really sustainable thing to do. So again, you know, buy a pair of shoes that you really want and that are really good quality. I don't have loads of shoes, but the ones I have are probably a little bit more expensive, but I'm not buying another 10 pairs for every occasion.
Yeah, yeah, that's what I've... Part of my, you know, the wedding dress I didn't really think about, but in terms of things like shoes, I was very keen that I wanted to be able to wear them again. And, you know, I... chosen a brand that you can have a colour change to the shoe so that yeah. afterwards I can send them off and they yeah. will change the colour of them so that I can just wear them again to whatever I want.
Yeah.
And that was really important to me because, you know, I will wear shoes again. I will do it. And I have pairs of shoes in my wardrobe that probably need to be changed now,
yeah.
but I've had them for probably a good 5-6 years just because,
yeah.
you know, the amount of times you actually wear them is low,
yeah.
but at the same time, you know, they don't need to be thrown away just because they've been worn once or twice.
Exactly. So I think it's just, for me, it's about investing in things that you really want and making them last. And, you know, and making that, and that's again, another sustainable way to sort of wear wear fashion?
Yeah, I think in terms of sort of sustainable fashion, I think we do associate it with a big price tag, don't we? And so in terms of, can sustainable fashion be affordable? That's, you know, yes and no, but at the same time, if you're thinking about your wardrobe very carefully and as you say, picking pieces that you can invest in and consistently rewear until they literally falling apart, then that's a great thing. And then I guess as well, mending things and being able to use that skill that someone like some people in your team will have to be able to fix something and continue to use it.
Definitely. I think it's just being about being as thoughtful as possible. You know, just trying to think about how you can get the most out of something. I mean, the thing with a wedding is, arguably, a wedding is an expensive occasion, even if you have 100%. A small wedding. What does the average wedding cost these days?
So the average wedding, I think at the moment, is £18,400 in the UK. And that's like nationwide.
Yeah.
So, and that's recent stats for 2022.
Yeah, so that's really interesting.
Yeah, it is really interesting. It's a lot of money for the average person to be spending on a wedding. But then again, it depends on where you're based in the country, because I know that my wedding is being based in the Southwest, and because a lot of weddings happen there and it's a high density of weddings, it costs more because there's the demand for it. So, you know, I guess it's a national average, but if you're getting married in central London,
it's likely going to cost
more than in like the Northwest.
Yeah, of course. There's going to be a massive difference to it. But I mean, even let's just take in the average, I mean, £18,000 is a lot of money. Mm. And to me, if you're going to have a dream wedding, you can look at that budget and think, well, actually, if I am going to splash out on this day, so some people might say, well, you know, I'm just going to get to wear that dress once and it's just part of it. But actually, that is probably one of the few things that will be, you know, left afterwards. Mm. So again, to me, to invest in that piece and then have something that you can look to maybe then incorporate into something that you can enjoy afterwards, obviously helps justify, I suppose, spending a little bit more. But I think it is difficult. So, for example, I mean, we're a British producer making in London, trying to source the, you know, really high quality fabrics, trying to source sustainable fabrics, maybe things that are made here in the UK, woven here in the UK, or good quality fibres. So as a consequence, that is always going to cost more. And having a piece of clothing, if it's made in handmade one by one, that's also going to cost more than obviously something that might be able to be produced on a volume. So I do think it probably does cost more. But I don't think if you look at a spectrum of dresses, I mean, from a price point of view, I think
there's
our prices spectrum. are very competitive. Mm. I don't feel like we're abundantly more expensive than sort of an equivalent.
I think in terms of like the spectrum of wedding dresses as well, it really depends on the bride, doesn't it? Because when you are shopping for a wedding dress, there's like dresses that are £500, and there are ones that you can buy on the high street, and then there are also dresses that are tens of thousands of pounds because you've chosen that specific designer, or you've chosen to have a massive dress which has got so much material and so much beading.
But you've got to think, you know, if you're picking a brand, I mean, obviously, you know, I've seen articles looking at sort of some of the big e-commerce websites and big high street fashion brands. Well, when they produce wedding dresses, and you know, and they're £200 or £300, well, of course they're £200, you know, they're making 5,000 of them in a production.
Yes.
You know, it's a mass produced garment, which is why, but a handmade equivalent is going to cost more, particularly if it's produced locally, if
and
it's
as
made
you said,
one by one.
Using couture techniques which take longer to do.
Exactly. So the thing is, I mean, from my point of view, you know, I think people who buy the brand who are looking at 29 Atelier are looking, they love the fact that they want something handmade, they want something made for them. They want something that's going to be made the way we make it, out of the fabrics we make it. They're invested in our vision, you know, whereas obviously, you know, you can't be all things to all people. But it's an interesting debate about how, you know, how the sustainable can come through on the mass produced through to a luxury product like myself. And of course, there is always things that different manufacturers can do on different levels to make bridal wear more sustainable. But for us, you know, we are very much a brand that's about handcrafted, made to order, a luxury product. And we're trying to put a lot of thoughtfulness and consideration into the way things are made to sort of really kind of fulfill the needs of somebody who is looking for something that is sustainable and eco-conscious. And there's obviously, like you said, demand is growing for that kind of thing, because I think it's quite hard to find.
Yeah, and I would also say the other thing that's quite hard to find sometimes, I would say, is a brand that can service a wide range of body shapes, body types and sizes, and being able to have a brand such as your own that literally makes it by hand.
Yeah.
And not by necessarily a set size template, shall we say. You're much more accessible in that way.
We do make, so our dresses are made to order, but made to size.
Right.
And we do offer, we can split sizes, and we also offer made to measure, mm-hmm. where you do a full toile. So there is a range of services that we offer the clients depending on their budget. But even if they're ordering a collection piece and it's made to size, it is still made, their order is made for them, their fabric's ordered in for them. You know, somebody's making their dress, you know, for that customer, as opposed to, so again, they're not always made to measure.
Yes, but I guess there is the option there that if you had a particularly interesting body shape, then you can
tweak
it.
Well, we quite often do, you know, it might be that actually quite a lot of girls are very petite, but they've got big boobs. Mm. So they want to have a bigger cup or bigger bust part on their dress to accommodate that, but have a slimmer size on the dress. Equally, it could be, you know, that they're split size. You know, I'm quite sort of petite on the top, but kind of got more generous hips. Mm. So again, mixing sizes can be really good.
Is that the kind of way that you work, in terms that you can split the dress in two, as you say, you can have the skirt afterwards and the top?
Yeah.
So it's almost putting those two sizes together is totally possible.
Exactly, yeah, definitely. There is a little bit of magic that happens in between of kind of...
We won't divulge your secrets.
Exactly. But the main thing is obviously it's getting the right garment to fit perfectly.
Amazing. And in terms of 29 Atelier as a brand, how do you work in terms of your ordering process? I mean, I know you're stocked in quite a few of our clients' boutiques, and we will put those boutiques in the show notes if you are interested in having a dress made by 29 Atelier. But in terms, how does the process work for you guys?
So essentially, we have our collection. Mm-hmm. They're in our stores, the boutiques that stock our brand. So you would book an appointment to go to visit them, and then they would walk you through the collection and show you all the options that are available. So it could just be that you fall in love with a dress as is, but equally, if you wanted something sort of adjusting or making to your requirements, then we can also accommodate changes. And then once you've chosen the dress, then it's made to order. So they then send the order over to us and we get it organised.
And in terms of like the ability to make slight changes, I mean, obviously not completely changing the design, because that would essentially be a bespoke piece, wouldn't it? But if you say a piece had sleeves and you didn't want sleeves but you loved the dress, like, is that possible?
Oh, massively. So I mean, there can be so many things that a client might like to change. It could be they don't want a big train. Mm-hmm. It could be that they want a longer train. It could be that they want to add a sleeve, take away a sleeve. It could be that they've got a religious requirement and they need their dress completely lined. So it's, you know, to make sure
more
it's
modest and,
more
yeah.
modest. So there's you know, anything that you... you know, your requirements are, you would tell the store, the stylist who's taking you through the collection, and then they would obviously find a way to make it possible.
Okay, that's really interesting in terms that, like, there are ways that you can alter your look to be more suitable for you, I guess.
Absolutely.
As well. And that goes back to the whole point of going being personal to yourself when you're picking a wedding dress.
Exactly. And again, if you're picking something that's truly for you, again, that makes it more something that is going to make it something that is completely suited to you, that you're going to then want to wear again.
So you kind of touched on it a little bit earlier, but in terms of making things locally and using local suppliers as a way to be a bit more eco-friendly with your wedding, why is that so important when it comes to wedding fashion?
So I think for me, in terms of when we're thinking about being eco-conscious, so that we can break it down into different areas. So of course you've got the fabric, what are fabrics made of and how are they made? But also it's thinking about who's making them and where they're being made. So, for example, with 29 Atelier, our production is all in South East London. And we're nestled in a small corner of London where everything is, that's where everything's, we're bringing our fabrics and everything into sort of a central point. And then we're all under one roof. Mm-hmm. Whereas if we were shipping things overseas, you've got to, you know, you potentially then, you know, you might be sourcing things, you know, from point A, you know, so they all end up going on a global journey just to be constructed, then they begin their shipping journey. Whereas with us, we produce the dress all within a small corner of of London, essentially. And then from there, it obviously goes around, you know, we have a store in Amsterdam, but literally it's made here in London and it goes there. So aside from actually the material content, in terms of the production, it isn't making an additional journey. And I think that's a really, that's, I think, one of the key things to be cherished and really sought out, is actually a producer that is making locally, rather than kind of going backwards and forwards. And also you've got to think about from an ethical point of view, because obviously it is the sustainable and the ethical, you know, thinking about supporting local communities, local families, local businesses. So again, that's really important to me, because as I said at the beginning about, I had this, you know, I wanted to be part of a resurgence of keeping skills alive in the United Kingdom, which I felt were being lost. Because so much of our industry has been shipped out overseas, whereas again, keeping those skills here alive, and it, again, if we've got those craft and heritage producers here, you know, it just makes sense to keep it as small, and then you know that where every part of that your investment is going to benefit, you know,
that local,
you know, your community. And I think there's a huge sense of purpose in that, to feel that actually, you know, I know that this is being produced by people that are looking, you know, after their workers and wanting to develop people, you know, sort of communities, rather than it just being made on a bigger scale.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point in terms of, you know, we always talk about sustainability anyway in the wedding industry, of like sourcing local foods and making
definitely.
Sure that
it's exactly the same principle as, you know, food. Obviously, there was a massive resurgence in the food industry where people started to look at their produce and actually thinking of, you know, about local ingredients. And again, it's exactly the same principle as that.
And in terms of as well, you know where it's grown, the venue has met the farmer that's grown it, and, you know, all of that aspect as well. So understanding where that's all come from, it, you kind of can translate it into the wedding fashion, and sort of knowing that, you know, it's made in this one place by these by these people that are skilled at what they do, and then it services that small community and that in that place. And that's what is really exciting about sustainability and a sustainable focus.
I mean, as the business grows, I definitely want to be part of, like I say, a resurgence in the industry and bringing people into the industry. So, young people out there who might have a love for making, creating, designing, and offering, opportunities to people that maybe are from, backgrounds where it's underprivileged and they might feel that they wouldn't even have a chance of getting into this industry, but where you could actually bring them in, nurture them, mentor them, and, train them so that, again, it can become a really...
It's a cherished skill, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. And something that's going to give them a really secure and happy life. Mm. And that's definitely the way I want to evolve the business. So again, it's very much centered around who's making them, where are we making them, what are we making them from. And obviously, like I said to you earlier, in terms of fabric development, I do think with fabric science, incredible things are happening in the world. There's a fabric science company in America, and they're researching things such as making things out of, like pineapple skin and grape leather and, like natural harvests that they can grow sustainably and more efficiently, reducing down on the water. And as our science improves, our offering of will develop, and we're just trying to, and what I'm trying to do is find, as step by step, really refining and bringing to bear the best we can. I mean, we have buttons in our collection. It's just a small thing, but there, it's called a Corozo nut. It's a nut from a palm tree in Ecuador, and literally the nuts fall off the tree and they're completely sustainable product, and then they're turned into buttons by the only button maker in Britain. And again, I just think that whole, something that is a completely natural product then being used in a cherished way is just an incredible, it's the smallest of detail, it kind of doesn't really matter, but it's a lovely
But it's important it's to thing. Think about those tiny details and how they can have an impact. Plastic buttons.
Yeah.
That must be a massive problem for the fashion industry. And
definitely.
And just being able to use something that is a natural but also produced locally to you is really cool.
Oh, massively. And it's one of those little details. Again, it's not going to make you choose a wedding dress, but if you fall in love with the dress, and then it has got that little story and that little detail, rather, to me, that just makes it all the more special. And as we go along, we're going to be finding, the and refining our offering, so it's only going to get better, because I think we are in the midst of a green revolution. It is the next industrial revolution, is that we have got to get to grips with the environment emergency that the world is facing. And of course, life's for living and we all want to have those amazing moments, but it's just trying to make the best choices that we can, and do it in the best way that we can.
Amazing. So Liz, my final question for you today, I think it'd be really nice to wrap this up by asking you what your three top tips are for couples that are wanting to be more sustainable with their wedding fashion choices.
So my three top tips, I mean, I have to say, go and discover 29 Atelier.
Obviously.
Obviously. Because I think if you want to kind of, if you come and discover our collections, I think you will be surprised and delighted with the way that they feel, the way that they look, and the details that go into the dresses. But of course, aside from doing a pitch for myself, I think, just ask those questions. When you're, making your appointments to go and look at the boutiques, to choose your dresses, be a little bit inquisitive, you know, for, you know, just be a bit thoughtful to ask, you know, where are things made? And ask those questions so that you can actually identify, because I suppose the biggest problem that brides and grooms will have when they're wanting to choose is how do they know what they're choosing is a sustainable brand or not. So I think don't be afraid to ask. I think is the kind of top tip number one. And then, you know, also take time to consider what you're buying. I think if you can choose natural fibres, if possible, that I think is quite a really good starting point.
And just run through
point.
Those natural fibres again for us. So it was silk, cotton. Are there any others that...
So I think silk and cotton would be
the main ones.
Yeah. I mean, of course, you've got wool. I mean, anything that's kind of a natural fibre is obviously going to be degradable. I mean, obviously, you've got a whole plethora of materials that you could choose from an eco-conscious point of view. I mean, I know I could give a full list for you to put into
I'll pop a full list in there and into a blog, and we can sort of share that with you guys as well.
I mean, anything that's a natural fibre, I think, is a good idea. Again, anything that is locally made is a good idea. I mean, and that's really all that you can do, and apart from really specifically hunting out a brand that is tailoring to that specific requirement. But it's just asking those questions. Exactly. But you know, it's just asking those questions, because I think it's probably one of those things sometimes that people don't even actually, you know, you just go and look.
Well, I didn't consider it. Yeah. You know, it's not something that was on my radar at that moment in time. So it's just an interesting thing to hear. So if you are about to start shopping for your wedding clothing, whether that's your suits, whether that's your dresses, just maybe if you want to consider that and be a bit more eco-conscious with it, then those are great tips and, you know, great places to start.
Exactly. And I think now with the, you know, with Instagram and Pinterest, you know, and YouTube, you know, again, they're great, there's easy resources to start, you know, just putting kind of feelers out to find out how you want to source a sustainable parts of your wedding day. You know, there's some great blogs out there where you can you know, that sharing kind of ways to sort of recycle. I mean, I think another tip is vintage. That would be, I know definitely for my, when I got married, you know, I wore a vintage coat that was my mum's. It was like 30 years old. It was obviously very lovely.
otherwise you wouldn't have worn it.
But again, you know, don't be afraid to look at that. I mean, sometimes we have brides come to us and they might have an element, you know, maybe a heirloom piece that they want incorporating into their dress. So again, looking at what you've got within that you could add an element in. So rather than, you know, I think I love vintage. I mean, this is vintage, you know. But if you can find those little gems and those little antiques to add to your look, then that can be another great way of, A, creating a unique look, but B, sort of using things that are already out there.
Thank you so much, Liz. It's been such an interesting episode, and I'm going to go away and do some research now into how I can reuse other aspects of my wedding outfit. So if you are interested in finding out more about 29 Atelier and their collections, we will put all links to their social media and their website in the show notes, and as well as link to some of the bridal boutiques that are on Guide to Brides that stock 29 Atelier. So do look out for those and get involved if you are wanting to be a bit more sustainable with your bridal wear and look at that couture option for your wedding dress. Don't forget to subscribe so that you can be notified when the next episode drops on our YouTube channel or on any sort of podcasting platform. But for now, happy wedding planning. Thank you, Liz.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Guide to Brides, the wedding podcast. Head over to guidetobrides.co.uk to continue your wedding planning. And don't forget to like, follow, and subscribe on our social media channels at Guides for Brides.